I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 15th of October. Last year, the Jefferson County, Colorado School District, which is in the suburbs of Denver, elected a new conservative majority to the board, and one of the new members, Julie Williams, proposed a new committee to review the new advanced placement history curriculum. Her proposal said she wanted to make sure the materials, quote, promote citizenship, patriotism, and essentials and benefits of the free enterprise system, respect for authority, respect for individual rights, and do not encourage or condone civil disorder, social strife, or disregard of the law. The conservative members were interested in promoting American exceptionalism. Well, this created quite a bit of controversy, and you may have read about some of the protests that took place about 3 weeks ago. Teachers staged sick outs in protest, and then thousands of students began walkouts across the county. One of the members of the school board said the students were mere pawns for the teachers' union. It's brought into question how we teach U.S. history, and has this become incredibly politicized? We're going to have two guests with us during the course of this hour to talk about the issue, to talk about the new guidelines for AP history, how we teach history. Do we need to teach American exceptionalism? Exceptionalism is history, American history, messy at times and not always laudatory toward what America has done. We'll have two guests with us and welcome your phone calls. Kenneth Pomeranz is our first guest. He's a university professor. He's a professor of history at the University of Chicago, previously taught at University of California, Irvine, BA from Cornell, PhD from Yale University, and his scholarship focuses mostly on China. He's very interested in comparative and world history. He, until just this year, was president of the American Historical Association, the oldest and largest society of historians and professors of history in the country. They promote historical studies, the teaching of history, and the preservation of and access to historical materials. A little later in the hour today, John Ford, president of the Jefferson County Education Association, a social studies teacher at Moore Middle School, which is located, of course, in Colorado. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're also on Twitter. You can find us at K Dunn Show. Professor Kenneth Pomeranz, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, well, thank you. It's nice to have a chance to talk with you.
Well, who would have thought that this caused all of these students to protest? People were en masse going to the school board meeting. Teachers were walking out. Sort of a lesson in American history, huh?
Yeah, it certainly is. It's a lesson in actually what citizenship is, right? These are young men and women who actually showed that they are absorbing the kinds of lessons that you need in order to be a citizen.
Mm-hmm. Tell me where the controversy started. Who decided that the AP history curriculum should be, is it safe to say, modified or changed a bit or added to?
Okay, well, the AP history exam is run by the College Board. They've been doing this for many years. They bring in secondary school teachers and college and university professors as consultants to help them design the tests and design the curriculum. And the argument was less over the curriculum. I mean, the College Board doesn't say, this is what you cover here. It was more of a framework, a set of goals and guiding ideas about what we're trying to do with the class.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, whenever you teach history, in fact, whenever you teach lots of subjects, there's a complicated relationship between the subject as a checklist, right? A set of things that you really want people to know, and the subject as a set of tools and habits of mind,
mm-hmm.
ways of thinking that you want to make sure people learn. And there's always some trade-off in class time between those two things, but ultimately they're unified, right? We teach the habits of mind that we hope students learn by specific examples. We don't lecture at them, you need to learn to put things in historical context. That's not very helpful. What we do is we show them a letter by Lincoln in which he appears to be saying something that seems peculiar. And then you say to them, well, you know, here he's using the word liberty, but he may not mean exactly the same thing that you mean by liberty because he wrote 150 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So before you decide that he was wrong, let's do some other research, look at some other documents, figure out how people used the word liberty back then. Right? So you build the context in which you interpret a document through the reading of other documents. You're building, so you're giving students or helping students get for themselves the factual material that you that they need at the same time that they're learning the habits of mind. And so I think part of what the AP people were trying to do was to slightly, and I emphasize slightly, shift the emphasis more towards making sure the habits of mind got taught, which does not by any means mean that they were abandoning the teaching of facts, right? Because the two ultimately go together.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, though, reacted to this by thinking that they were de-emphasizing the factual material that students need to have, and particularly that they were emphasizing a certain set of facts that they felt promoted the, and I'm putting this in quotation marks, right understanding of U.S. history.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a big part of what students learn or should learn is that there isn't a right version of U.S. history in the singular. There are a whole bunch of versions of U.S. history, and it's not that anything goes. Some things are simply untrue, but that there are a whole bunch of things that are true given different priorities and different emphases, and that what you learn in a history class is in effect the interweaving of those different things.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, that there's American history as it looks to a white immigrant from, you know, let's say Finland, which looks quite different from the way it looks from a fifth generation Virginian plantation owner,
right,
and different than it looks to a Mexican American in,
mm-hmm,
California.
Mm-hmm. Or a Native American, certainly.
Correct. The list goes on and on.
At the risk of being too general with the criticism does seem to be from some of these board members, and it goes beyond the board members. The, mm-hmm, Republican National Committee passed a resolution branding the curriculum as a radically revisionist view of American history. Texas Board of Education has gone on record against allowing the curriculum framework in state classrooms. There's debating this in South Carolina and also in Tennessee. They're saying that there's too much of an emphasis on negative aspects of our nation's history while omitting or minimizing positive aspects. You keep hearing this American exceptionalism, and people should believe in American exceptionalism. I'm not sure what they mean by that, but that seems to be the general thrust here. But history isn't always positive, is it?
No, of course not. History is about what people have actually done, and some of that is good, some of that is not so good. Some of it we can argue about whether it's good or not, and some of it is a mixed bag, right? If you tell the story of how slavery was eventually abolished, you know, you're telling a story that involves, you know, to do that you have to tell the story of slavery and of slavery's defenders. And so some might say you're emphasizing the negative there. At the same time, if the end point of the story is, well, you know, it got abolished, then, you know, there's a positive part too. And, you know, a good deal of what sophisticated historical thinking is about getting beyond the simple praise and blame,
mm-hmm.
right? We don't do history in order to go back in the past and say, well, you know, Woodrow Wilson had this nice idea for a League of Nations, but on the other hand, he participated in making Washington, D.C. more segregated than before. You know, therefore, we give him a 6.5 on a scale of 10 or something. Right? That's not what historical thinking is about. It's about understanding both the dynamics of how things happened, in which good and bad are often very, very intermixed, and understanding how the world looked from a particular set of point of views.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that we have ignored in our earlier teaching of history, perhaps we've ignored some of those other points of view, some of those other populations that were part of America?
I mean, certainly it was true at certain times. There was, for much of the first half of the 20th century, you got a standard view of, for instance, the Civil War and Reconstruction that was very, very much built on, you know, an attempt to look sympathetically at what the South had been trying to do, which was not, you know, there was nothing wrong with trying to see things from their point of view. But what was wrong was that if in order to do that, you had to not look at all from the point of view of African Americans, or you had to not look at all from the point of view of white abolitionists or whatever. And there certainly have been times and places where all sorts of things were just obliterated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, either because people were unsympathetic with them or because they didn't even notice that they were history. When I was a first-year graduate student, they took us on a tour of the manuscript and archives collection at the Yale Library. And one of the things they told us is that every time you used the collection, you would fill out a card when you were done. And one of the things on the card was, is there any topic that this collection should be indexed under that we don't have it under? And the person who took us on the tour explained that one of the reasons for this is that Yale had for decades the papers of one very prominent Connecticut family, important political leaders. And because they had all the family papers, they also had the papers of the women.
Mm-hmm.
For decades, nobody had bothered to look at them. Somebody finally looked at them and found that there was all this fascinating stuff. You know, advice from mothers to daughters on their marriages, advice on handling your all sorts of family issues, you know, all sorts of things that hadn't been considered real history before. So we've come some distance in creating a more inclusive history. That doesn't mean that, you know, disagreement is over, right? It means that there are more voices at the table.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls. We're talking about this. Some have called it the latest chapter in the culture wars that has taken place in Jefferson County, Colorado. It's not just in Jefferson. It's in Texas as well, in Tennessee, and also in South Carolina. But what happened in Jefferson County just a few weeks ago caught our attention because thousands of students were protesting. They had a petition they gave to the school board saying they were very concerned about a review of the AP curriculum course because of the comments that were made by conservative members of the school board saying that America is exceptional and our study of history needs to reflect that. There was too much emphasis on the negative parts of American history instead of the positive parts. I mean, get this, for this is a member of the State Board of Education in Colorado who said, during a long discussion about this. In her opinion, the curriculum of the AP history course downplays our noble history and accentuates the negative view. She went on, as an example, I note our slavery history. Yes, we practiced slavery, but we also ended it voluntarily at great sacrifice. While the practice continues in many countries till today, shouldn't our students be provided that viewpoint? So we're talking about this controversy, and our guest, the first part of the show, is Kenneth Pomeranz. He's a professor of history at the University of Chicago, and he is has been the president of the American Historical Association. How should we teach history? Are you amazed that this culture war is finding its way into the study of history? And are you amazed that so many thousands of students in Colorado, at least, were very, very upset about this? We welcome your phone calls. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Call as soon as you can for our first guest. The next part of our program, we will be speaking with a middle school social studies teacher from Jefferson County, Colorado, who's also with the teachers union in that area. To you momentarily, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The way we teach AP history is what we're talking about this hour of the program, looking at the controversy in Jefferson County, Colorado, controversy in other states as well, and welcoming your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org, and our Facebook page, if you'd like to go that direction, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We have lines open for you right now. It's my understanding, Professor, that the College Board has, and I don't know how actively they've done this, threatened to withdraw recognition of the country's AP U.S. history courses if school boards change the way the course is taught. What do you know about that?
I actually don't know that much about that, but I could see why they would want to do that, why they would say that, you know, these exams don't come out of nowhere. They're the product of lengthy consultation among people who have devoted years and years of their lives to teaching and studying history. It makes sense that if you're then going to give a nationwide exam on which you know, students will inevitably be judged against each other to some extent, that it doesn't make much sense to have individual local school boards meddling with that for political reasons and then saying it's the same course.
Mm-hmm.
It either is or it isn't.
And evidently, this has become a political issue, I've read as well. There are some close and interesting governor race and a Senate race in Colorado, and this has become fodder for political conversation as well.
Well, it's not surprising. I mean, you mentioned the culture wars. This has happened before. And as you know, it happens not only with respect to fields like history, right? It happens with respect to the sciences, climate change, evolution, et cetera, et cetera. There are always people who think that there are political points to be made by accusing other people of indoctrinating children. You know, and there are probably even times when it's true. This isn't one of them.
Let's go to some phone calls for you. We start with Mark in the Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I just was listening to your program, and I myself am a history nerd, so to speak. And I just wanted to congratulate the author and your guest. I mean, it's a great subject, and I agree that any form of history is history. And you can't whitewash it or varnish it, try to make it look nice for public opinion. I mean, you have to know, to understand it, you have to know everything about it. And it disturbs me that, especially a school board member, I were you talking about in Colorado, or said that we voluntarily stopped slavery. I think there's millions of dead people that would say that wasn't very voluntary. And people have to know that to understand it. And I think you guys are, just by talking about it, bringing it up is very important.
Thank
you. Take the question up there.
Thanks, Mark. Kenneth.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, you know, even when there are things that we don't like, we need to know them. Sometimes especially the things we don't like are the things we need to know. You know, the most appealing stories are, you know, that's fine if you want to make a movie or write a book and label it fiction. But the criterion for something that calls itself history can't be, is this the most appealing? Not to mention that there's always the question of the most appealing to whom.
Right.
Right? A version of the Civil War that, you know, the ghost of John Calhoun would like is not going to be one that the ghost of Frederick Douglass would like.
Right. Absolutely. Well, it's also interesting that we change our opinions sometimes. I mean, history is evolving all the time. So there may be some part of American history or some character in history that you really thought very highly of, and suddenly years later, historians are rounding out the record, and you might find some things that you used to like that you no longer like, right? It's, historians are always studying the record.
Right. So sometimes we find out things we didn't know. Sometimes in the light of new information, we say, you know, X was less important than we thought at the time, and this other thing was more important. So it's not that we've changed our view of where this person stood on A and B. It's that we've realized that, hey, you know, in the heat of the moment, we thought A was the most important issue. Now we look back and we say, you know, maybe this guy was right to say, mm-hmm. I'm putting my energy into B.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it can work the other way, too.
Margo in Prairie du Chien. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm having a real hard time wrapping my head around this whole issue. It's like, aren't we supposed to teach our young people the facts, the truth, the reality, the mistakes we've made, as we would in life? If we're going to sugarcoat everything to one point of view, what has happened to our educational system? We're skewing the facts for one political interest or another. How are they to grow up and learn from the mistakes in history on how to make it better, or the pluses that happened in history to use as a stepping stone? I'm having a real hard time with this.
I mean, I agree with you that we shouldn't be in the business of sugarcoating things. We should try and give students something as close as to what we think was and is true as possible. At the same time, it's never quite that easy. What students need to learn, for one thing, depends on what they already know. And sometimes, you know, if they've gotten their history from Hollywood or whatever, they know some things that need to be unlearned. So you wind up emphasizing some things more than you would if you were teaching to a truly blank slate. And sometimes, again, your sense of what's truly important changes because your world has changed, right? There's a whole field of environmental history that's basically come into being in the last 40 years. And I don't, you know, it's not that 19th century deforestation hadn't already happened at the time that people writing textbooks in the 1950s were writing them. But the kinds of concerns about the environment that we have today were not very common in the 1950s. So it's not surprising that environmental history didn't seem that important in the 1950s. You know, now we have a different view. So, yes, we want to be as objective as we can. We should never change what's in the text simply because we don't like it. But at the same time, we should also remember history is written by and for living people. And so we're also never going to be able to nail it down, walk away, and say, there, I now have the history of X. Mm-hmm. Nobody's ever going to need to look at this again. They can just copy what I said.
And we thank you very much, Professor Kenneth Pomeranz, for being with us.
Okay, well, thank you.
Kenneth is professor of history at the University of Chicago, taught at other schools as well, and was president of the American Historical Association, which is the oldest and largest society of historians and professors of history in the United States. We are talking about the revisions that were made to the AP curriculum, although it's up to teachers, of course, what it is, how they're going to frame their classroom instruction. College board officials said revisions were made to encourage analytical thinking and to stress that it's a framework. Teachers choose their own curricular materials and can add topics that their communities feel are important. In a conservative school board in Jefferson County, Colorado, there was a decision finally made to have a review of this curriculum. There were conservative members of the Board of Education who thought that what was being proposed here was, you know, essentially not very American. It didn't look at Americans' exceptional role in the world. There was too much of an emphasis on the negative parts of history instead of the positive parts of history. So this has become a huge issue in Colorado. It's not limited to Colorado. It's been taking place in Texas as well, in South Carolina, and in other parts of the country that just haven't received as much attention. We thought we would talk about it because it resulted in schools having to close in some places in Colorado, thousands of students protesting this and putting together a petition, teachers expressing their concern, saying that it was censorship that was taking place here. So what has been going on? What led up to it? What's been going on in Colorado since all the demonstrations? John Ford is joining us now. John is president of Jefferson County Education Association. He is a social studies teacher at Moore Middle School in Jefferson County, Colorado. The organization is a professional association and also an advocacy organization representing 5,200 non-administrative professional educators working in the Jefferson County School District. We'll be welcoming phone calls for him as well. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Give us a little bit of a history, John, of how everything led up to what happened 3 weeks ago when we had this really contentious school board meeting and schools closing and thousands of students becoming involved. When did all of this start?
Well, if we go back 10 months ago, we had a school board election that during that election, three conservative people were voted into those positions, and now we call them the board majority. And that board majority really changed the complexion of how this school would be run. And there's a lot of contentiousness between, of course, you know, the Teachers Association and the school board. And that all kind of manifests itself over a 10-year time period. And then the one thing that hit the nerve of the community was when the proposal came out by Julie Williams, who is one of the board majority members, that was trying to sanitize and purify curriculum in the school district. Now, the root of the cause is, you know, her original proposal was a committee to review curriculum, and it looked at fifth grade health, which we call growing and changing, and it also specifically looked at the AP U.S. history curriculum. And the U.S. history, AP U.S. history curriculum was that the flashpoint where students said to themselves that, you know, the AP programs are in 35 colleges and universities across the country and the world, and they can be transferred to those 3,500 universities and colleges. And this one, if the framework is changed, those college credits could be in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm. And the concerns among the conservative members, we being kind of general here, maybe you'll know more specifics because you've heard all of these arguments, that essentially there was too much of focus on negative things we've done wrong in America, American exceptionalism not highlighted. Is there more than that? Fill that out for us.
Well, you know, if you go, let's go right before the, you know, Julie Williams proposal. You know, this board majority had done some secretive and wasteful and disrespectful things to our community, and they challenged a lot of things. So they set up this environment for our community. And Jefferson County is the second largest school district in Colorado. We have 85,000 students in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a suburb. We're not an inner city school district. And it's we're about 80% white, middle class. And so for this kind of movement to come out of, you know, this suburban environment is pretty amazing and special in its own right. But for this conservative board to stir that pot so much that it, of course, it moved the teachers, but it moved those students. And now we're seeing this big groundswell of community action, too, because people are having the same question. How come they're meddling with history, and what don't they want our students to learn?
Mm-hmm. Well, how did they get elected to the school board?
Well, we had low voter turnout, and I, you know, one thing I beg your listeners to pay attention to is elections do matter, and ballots dropped in Colorado yesterday, and you know, people need to take ownership of one, the elections and the electorate that they're a part of, but if people don't vote, then you get low voter turnout of 33% of the total electorate that went out and voted, and that's how you get these kind of people running a school district.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, and by the way,
sure,
this is not just a Jefferson County,
no,
Colorado.
I mean,
this,
right.
These local school boards are being taken over by, you know, by political entities all over this country. So to us, that's, you know, that's the message that, you know, I really want people to know that elections matter, and school boards are where the battleground, the new battlegrounds are.
What's amazing to me, John, is that you had not just a handful of students, you had thousands of students gathering petitions, protesting this, waiting in long line to speak at the school board meeting. The response from young people was phenomenal. Why? How do you explain that?
Well, that's the interesting part of this. The Friday before the students walked out, two high schools closed because of teacher sick outs. Those sick outs ended on Friday, and then on that following Monday, students started to organize themselves. And you started to see an occasional school here, one or two schools doing their own protests and walking out. And by the end of the week, that's when it really took off, and thousands of kids were walking out of their schools in protest. And I know something. I taught high school for 18 years. I only taught middle school for the last 2 years, but I was an AP teacher myself.
Oh, you were.
And one of the interesting things that I know about high school kids is as soon as you tell them not to do something, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you, I've got this little chunk of the resolution that Julie Williams had. It says, you know, the material should not encourage or condone civil disobedience, social strife, or disregard for law. And kids read that. And, you know, and then it started this whole movement of, you know, what are my First Amendment rights as a student? And it actually really engaged that population of kids to move into action. And that was the really awesome thing to see. You know, people say, you know, these kids are political pawns being used by whoever.
By the teachers union, yeah, is what they've said.
Yeah, and that's not true. These kids have minds of their own. They decided to take these actions themselves, and to see it grow to what it grew into and what it continues to grow into is pretty amazing.
So where do things stand now?
Well, So a couple of weeks ago, we had a school board meeting, and this curriculum review committee came up, and this is really disappointing and very, very confusing. So I hope your listeners follow me through this thing. The curriculum review committee was brought up to the board for a conversation and then a vote to go ahead with it. And the superintendent, Daniel McMinimy, came up with a compromise. And the compromise would be that they already have an existing review committee. That's just educators and currently was educators and an administration that looked at curriculum. And then they would, you know, put the curriculum out to the community to take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
But here's how it works. This review committee was supposed to have three members from every board member would nominate three people on this committee. And you'd have 15 nominees, and out of that 15 nominees, nine people would be chosen. Well, if you have a conservative board of, you know, three members and, you know, the other two board members, you know, you're looking at a nine panel committee that would be formed. I know that's confusing. Anyway, as the compromise worked through, they put it into an existing review committee. And then in this review committee, each board member could nominate two people to this review committee. And one administrator and a student would be, I'm sorry, one teacher and a student would be involved in this committee as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you still do the math, you're going to end up with six community members versus four. So I know that's a very long, drawn-out explanation, but the committee is going forward. It'll still be stacked with people from that board majority side.
Mm-hmm.
So they haven't censored or purified any of the curriculum yet, but it's a high probability that they will.
Story in progress. We're going to welcome phone calls for you. John Ford, president of the Jefferson County Education Association. You heard him say he was a high school AP teacher for 18 years. He is a social studies teacher at Moore Middle School. And we're welcoming phone calls. This is a fascinating story on so many levels, including the makeup of, he says this is not just peculiar to Jefferson County. We know it's also going on in other states, but he said it's low voter turnout that resulted in very conservative members creating a majority on this school board, and these are the ramifications. Our phone number for you to join the conversation is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, where we would love to hear your thoughts. And we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls now for our guest this hour, John Ford. 800-486-8655 is our number. And we go to Adam in Gills Rock. Hi, Adam.
Hey, I just wanted to say that, I think what the important thing is that, you know, in high school, we're teaching our kids is learning critical thinking. And if you're teaching critical thinking instead of just dates and facts, the kids will be able to figure out whether America is the country that we sometimes teach it to be, or if there's facts about it that aren't as glorious.
That's a good point. How do we teach critical thinking? John?
Well, you know, I used to teach AP World History, and, you know, part of the curriculum is really getting, you know, a student to look at two sides of the story. And, you know, we had Columbus Day the other day, and mm-hmm. when you look at Christopher Columbus as the explorer, you know, a lot of things socially, you know, come up. You know, was he a hero or a villain? And I think what social studies teachers and all teachers really should do is really give students the evidence on both sides of that argument, both good and bad, and have them do those critical, you know, thinking skills for themselves and develop their own opinion about that particular historical person or event or subject. And what's interesting about that resolution that was brought forward was it says instructional materials should present positive aspects of the United States and its heritage. And you know, that's the one. You know, if you're a historian, there's a lot of things that you have to get into students' hands so they can analyze for themselves. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Thank you very much, Adam, for the call. Brian in Green Bay, hi.
Hi there. I appreciate the discussion. This is obviously a needed discussion, and as the person, the teacher, has been sharing about, this is an issue in different parts of the country. You know, the question of that I'm, the thing that I'm not hearing is exactly what is the content, you know, what is in the textbook or in the curriculum that's at issue. And the reason that I ask that as a former public school teacher, you know, comprehensively, you're telling a story. You're telling a series of stories when you talk about history of the United States or particular histories of the world. And every country has a story. And obviously ours is a mixed story. And I'm just wondering, what is it, you know, is it that there's, from the perspective of, you know, I understand you're talking about critical thinking and so forth, but some things you come down on about facts, about what has happened in history and how that is told. For instance, the difference between the abolitionist point of view and before and during the Civil War and the other side of that issue. What is it that is a complaint about what's being left out?
All right. John?
I think that's a really good question because that gets us to where the rub is or where the point is. It would be up to the review committee to select the material that would be taught in that course.
Mm.
Do you see, right now, that's kind of an unknown. But, you know, if you were doing that elementary health curriculum, what would they leave out in that? You know, what would they choose to look at in the AP U.S. history and choose to leave out? And right now, the framework for the AP is already set up. That curriculum is set up. You know, this is, you know, if your students are going to be successful on the AP exam at the end of the course, you know, these are the things that need to be covered. Well, if you start to, you know, cherry pick the curriculum, certain things won't be covered, and then success on that exam could be in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm. And also, I understand that the College Board has concerns with changes to their recommendations here, that they may withdraw recognition of the country's AP U.S. history courses if they change the way that the course is taught.
Absolutely. That was the thing that it came out about a week after, once the protests started to happen, brought a lot of attention to it, and the AP came out, and they basically said, hey, you know, if there's tampering with this curriculum, then, you know, you might not be recognized as an AP provider. I would say that would be the best way to put that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Brian, for the call. Steve in Neillsville. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thank you for having me. This is another part of the liberals trying to force their agenda upon we the people. Just like gay marriage and everything else, they're trying to teach a different way to change our culture. Our goal is our values as a nation and people. You know, history always repeats itself, but these people have gone too far in forcing their way upon us. Our vote no longer makes a difference. Here in Wisconsin, we voted that marriage be honored between a man.
All right, we're not talking about gay marriage, but we are. Liberals have forced their way. There was somebody on the school board or a parent of one of the young people who made the point that this is all being fashioned by people who are college professors, and we all know how liberal they are.
Well, I don't know about that. I think we need to teach the history of us, and the us lots of times gets missed, because when you look at the United States, and I always go back to the last two words of the Pledge of Allegiance, for all, and, you know, this is a country for all, and we're not all the same. We all bring our unique differences and backgrounds to this country, and each one of those unique differences and backgrounds help to shape who we have become. We are not the same country we were 50 years ago, 100 mm-hmm. years ago, or 150 years ago. This country is continuously evolving and changing, and our people are as well. Socially, and our values change. They've changed throughout history. This is nothing new. But to teach history shouldn't have a conservative spin or a liberal spin. It should be a course where kids learn about us, and then how do they apply that to the current times.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Steve brings up an interesting area where you look at current history or the history of homosexuality in U.S. history. I mean, I don't know how many places are teaching that right now, but they should be, considering all that's been happening. It's not a matter of liberals pushing an agenda of gay rights on this country. It's an evolution of human rights for a group of people who have really, talk about a group of people who have been out of the history books. There's one.
Yeah, and to see what the Vatican has done over the last week, it's been quite surprising. This is not only a United States thing, it's a global thing as well. So, you know, Bob Dylan said the times are changing, and it's really interesting to see how historical institutions like the Catholic Church have opened up dialogue to people who have been excluded.
Yeah. Jim in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. I'd like to I taught only in the prison system as a drug and alcohol treatment social worker, but I over the years, my feeling is that history is a discovery process, and history actually evolves over time, because the more you read, the more different things you find out, and so that sometimes changes your perspective. For example, yesterday, though I had a perspective reinforced, I saw the film Kill the Messenger, which was about the Gary Webb, who wrote the book Dark Alliance, concerning running the drugs into the country to support the Contras. In history, when I grew up in the 40s and 50s, Indians on television were portrayed as savages, that just killed white people for apparently no reason. And yet later on, I visited the Crazy Horse Memorial out in South Dakota, and Crazy Horse said that the only thing that promised that white people had ever kept with Indians was the promise to take their land. And I went down to see Ronald Reagan's home in Dixon, Illinois, and I took a side trip to another museum where the Blackhawk, if you Google Blackhawk surrender speech in 1830, you'll find again more indication of betrayal by Indians by white people. And when I was in grad school in 1965 at the University of Wisconsin, they were talking about the Horace Mann theory of education, and Horace Mann was pushing the idea that the best thing to do was not have any controversy in the schools. And I said at that point in time, and I would still hold to it, that Horace Mann was wrong, because if you have a situation where there's no controversy in the schools, then somebody who wants to move forward to a different analysis is denied, and also the conservative person who wants to go backward in time is denied. And so in a situation where there's no controversy in the schools, there's an implied consent with things as
right. There's nothing wrong with some good controversy in schools, with controversial teachers as well. Thank you, Jim. Quickly, we want to get to one more call. It has to be short. Anne in Stevens Point, can you do it in 20 seconds?
Yes. Is this one more thing coming to us from the American Legislative Exchange Council?
John.
I can't prove that yet.
All right. Thank you very much, John, for being with us. Stay in touch. We'll be interested in following the story.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Our guest, the second part of this hour, from Jefferson County, Colorado, suburb of Denver, president of the Jefferson County Education Association, social studies teacher at Moore Middle School. It's an interesting thing that's going on, not just there, but I was just amazed how many students were involved. Isn't that incredible? 4,000 students in closing schools because of the controversy surrounding this. Thanks very much to Scott Myers for producing this interesting hour, and thanks to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. I'm sorry we didn't get to to all of your phone calls. We were just busy. We are on Facebook, and some people have left messages there. So they're good to read. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. News is coming up momentarily, and then we'll be talking about The Color Purple, which is now in a terrific performance at the Milwaukee Rep. So stay with us.